Even before the natural gas industry took off here in Appalachia, we've dealt with these questions for over a century, as the coal industry has inspired many of the same jobs versus health and environment debates. It's raised concerns over the individual rights of landowners over energy companies. These questions have divided families, communities, and often pitted neighbors against neighbors. Ken Ward reports for the Charleston Gazette-Mail in Charleston, West Virginia. He's been writing about the coal industry his entire career. That work has won him awards, but also drawn disdain from many in the coal industry. Our associate producer, Eric Douglas, sat down with Ward to talk about the similarities and differences he sees between the coal and natural gas industries and how those industries are regulated.
What are some of the coming challenges you see for states, not West Virginia and the region, when it comes to regulating natural gas?
What we see, if we pay attention to the history of West Virginia's relationship with the coal industry and apply it to the relationship with the natural gas industry, we see Governor Marland saying, you know, we need to more adequately tax this industry. Otherwise, all of the wealth, all of the riches that are created are going to be hauled someplace else, and we're going to be left with scarred mountains and polluted streams and damaged workers, and not have the benefits of all of that economic activity. And I think, you know, we see that now. We see places where coal jobs have vanished or greatly diminished. We see that a lot of these places still don't have good roads. They don't have good schools. You know, a series that Katie Coyne at the Gazette-Mail worked on last year showed people in a lot of these places still don't have clean drinking water. Mm-hmm. You know, Jessica Lilly of Public Broadcasting has reported tons of stories about those issues in southern West Virginia.
You've written about the concept of a resource curse. We started with timber and the salt industry, oil and gas actually, and then mainly coal, and now we're back to oil and gas. Or back to natural gas specifically. Is that inevitable? Is it? Are we stuck with it?
Well, I don't think it's inevitable. You know, the resource curse is this concept that academics came up that kind of describes the notion that communities that have vast natural resources, whether it's coal or oil, timber, that the fact that they can make a quick buck, essentially, or quick, you know, bunch of jobs off of that discourages other kinds of development. And what I always think of, I think of two things when I try to conceptualize that. And one is a guy that came up to speak at a mountaintop removal public hearing, a guy from Eastern Kentucky someplace who came to a hearing here in Charleston and was concerned that some EPA rule was going to stop mountaintop removal. And, you know, he's a young man. He's like a kid, really. And he said, if you shut down this mining, there's nothing for me. That's the only future I possibly have. What a sad sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, who doesn't want for their kids any possible future they could imagine?
Are there some other places that you can think of that have avoided the resource curse, that they've taken what they've had and exploited it, but at the same time been able to diversify and grow beyond it, that presumably we could use as a model, I guess?
Well, I mean, I think there are places that have transitioned from mining that also have giant tourism industries. And, of mm-hmm. course, West Virginia, as you know, has a very vibrant, growing tourism industry. One of the issues that we seem to have difficulty figuring out, though, is the places where that tourism industry and these natural resource extraction industries conflict, and we so often seem to lean on the side of the natural resource industry as opposed to tourism. But one of the things that that unfortunately West Virginia has really fallen short on, that a number of other states have, is a future fund, some sort of dedicated mineral tax that goes into one big kind of bucket. and earns lots of interest and grows, and smaller portions of it are used to improve the education system, to improve infrastructure for economic development projects. You know, the kind of the poster child for this is the Permanent Fund in Alaska, which gives everybody a check every year. And West Virginia, with the leadership of then Senate President Jeff Kessler, passed a bill creating a future fund that would set aside a certain amount of natural resource taxes for these kinds of projects. The problem is they never funded the fund. They just created the fund, and they never actually they set up all of these little requirements. Well, if the state rainy day fund exceeds this, and if tax collections are X percentage above this, then we'll put some money into it. But they've never actually put any money into it. So we have this future fund with no funds.
They opened a checking account and never made the first deposit?
That's right.
How can a state like West Virginia that has been focused on extractive industries as long as you or I have been around her, and considerably longer. What can we do better to ensure the long-term benefits for our residents?
Well, I think, you know, part of it is kind of the way we frame things and the way we think about things, and sometimes it feels like West Virginians sometimes. We're just so grateful that somebody gave us something,
mm-hmm.
you know. Oh, thank you, Mr. Coal Institute, for coming here and creating these jobs. Well, you know, the coal was here first, and you know, thank you, Mr. Natural Gas Industry, and there's a great push to only tell good stories. You know, we hear this from the governor mm-hmm. all the time. Why aren't we talking about how awesome we are? And you know, for the record, I think West Virginia is pretty awesome. I've never lived anywhere else, but we've got a lot of problems too. And I think that kind of the first step, really, toward a road that gets us in a better place is not being so hesitant to tell the hard truths.
Do you see any positive effects from the natural gas boom? And I'm thinking the potential anyway for some of these downstream projects, the cracker plants and that kind of stuff.
Well, you know, we ran a story that with ProPublica a couple of weeks ago about the the natural gas storage hub. And there's a lot of really serious questions about whether that thing's really needed. We ran another story that Cape Michigan wrote about this. It's all very sort of secretive about what these downstream plants would be and where would they be and what would the pollution from them be. And to me, that's one of it's a huge mistake being made in not having a robust public discussion about, is this the direction West Virginia should go? I think it's really difficult to know if it's the direction West Virginia mm-hmm. should go when anybody, whether it's a newspaper reporter or an environmental activist or a housewife, anybody who tries to just say, hey, wait a second, let me ask some questions about that, immediately, oh, well, you're just against jobs.
Right.
You're just negative. You're driving people from West Virginia. Well, you know,
you're unpatriotic.
That's right. That's right. I mean, if all of these things, if they're so, you know, fan-dantastic for West Virginia, then they will withstand scrutiny.
That was investigative reporter Ken Ward speaking with our associate producer, Eric Douglas. Ken reports for the Charleston Gazette-Mail.